Sizin arzun neydir?
I'm sorry. That we are starting late. I'm apologizing to the department. There were people here before 2 o'clock. Papa and the members. But at the moment, there's quite a lot of activity happening within the department. Because we're supposed to be a presentation when it comes to the language development hours. By the course of this meeting, the decision was we'll all come to touch with. So, first, we got the whole day, I was in a commission where we discussed education. And, you know, we spoke to certain issues. And the commission will be reporting back now while we're at this meeting. So, let's apologize for each and every one. And, I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon meeting. And I hope that this speaker will be very helpful, because I think it's the first time that we've seen the National Education Association and the Athens Commonwealth at this meeting. And would like to hear what our youth can understand for. Because according to my knowledge, there will be an active way for having a study. And that the partners will move towards my team, NATO, at least. I'm not sure how to do it, but figuring that now, through our thinking in when it comes to the work job. On the members, I would like to address you. Because we're supposed to have a meeting on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the meeting is on, we're meeting the Department of Education, ERRT, and in the following week, we are meeting humanity. But whenever you look at the program as a student at the moment, and I hope you will be available to me, because we're going to have annual reports. And annual reports is only tangible on the 50th of September. Whether it's our student meeting or whatever else. Am I correct on that? I'd like to hear. What the members actually do annual reports come from other tables of members of it? Yes. And do we discuss annual reports on your office of it? Yes. Am I correct in that thinking? I think everyone is correct in that. So at least this week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday goes up. Now yes, on the members.
I'm not sure about the rules, but I would welcome any reason that would make us not meet tomorrow, Thursday and Friday, because of our commitment. I don't want to lie. I'm not sure of those rules, but any reason would be acceptable.
Yeah,
yes.
Listen, I don't put on the record, please. Because according to the rules, I was just 16 to find out whether you really know the rules. That the annual report is tabled on the 50th, goes to Mr. Speaker. And then it's referred to the committee. And these reports were not referred to us. So therefore, we can't have any reports for the next 3 days. We have only look after the 50th to it. But to encourage the department really to see that all these reports that we need will be with Mr. Speaker by the 50th. And then next week's meeting, seeing that we're not meeting Uma Lucy, we're going to have the deputy DG of the department back, and will be Mr. Padachi, and he's going to speak simply to exam readiness. You know, he's going to bring us a package. What we need to know, how ready are they for this examination? Because according to my knowledge, through the grade 12 will be starting the examination on the 17th of October. So we need to know everything when it goes, when it comes to the examination. So that is expected. Any apologies, Gershon?
Yes, ma'am.
And Honourable Mubun Shani, he's unfortunately busy with working with him in the province. And Honourable Dudley, he's attending the seminar.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and again, Honourable Members. As we need a team, we can't count. It's an honor to be here today. After the team was assembled last year, we identified this is one of the most important meetings that we are looking forward to, and we hope that there will be other opportunities in the future where leaders can give the portfolio committee on diversification an update on our developments. I have a short presentation, and the purpose of this presentation is to firstly explain what MEDIA is all about, and also to outline some of the milestones that we have reached in the process. So, MEDIA had emerged from a general focus on accountability that had, I think, been identified as a very necessary part of our education system. And as early as 2007, it was already established that an external agency to evaluate the entire education system and that reports to the ministry should be established. So in 2008, then Minister of Education, Lady Pandor, appointed a ministerial committee to investigate and advise the ministry on how the quality of education could be enhanced through an independent performance evaluation system. And the work of that particular committee that was led by Professor Jonathan Ramsden culminated in the establishment of the unit commonly known as the National Education Evaluation and Development Unit. I will talk about the core responsibilities of the unit in a little while. Sufficient to say at this point, I will share that the report of that ministerial committee was published on the 6th of April 2009. And the comments were submitted to Minister Mocheta in September of that year. And thereafter, an interim CEO was appointed who was with NEDU for just under a year, and on the 1st of July 2010, I was appointed as a CEO. Since then, and six additional staff members have been appointed to the NEDU team, and we will give further updates just a bit later in the presentation. The report went out for public comments in September 2010. Just after my appointment, we analysed those public comments, and although there were many interesting views from NGOs, teacher unions, teacher organisations, as well as a few provincial departments, one of the issues that came through quite strongly is that NEDU needs to be a statutory body outside of the Department of Basic Education with its own governance structure. And I now want to just point out that in the ministerial committee, several recommendations were made, and you will notice the first one is to function as an independent statutory body. These are words in the report. Of course, it's not true that we would work in arm's length from the government, it's an arm's length from the Department of Basic Education. Not from the government. So it is not the report that we write is not about the department reporting on its own performance. It's really an independent view. You will notice also, and we'll share that, and members that we are supposed to, at least on an annual basis, provide the minister with an authoritative, analytical, and accurate account on the state of schools and the status of teaching and learning, and also to recommend minimum performance standards for schools, to identify factors that inhibit or advance school improvement, to recommend appropriate development interventions, and to strengthen particularly the internal evaluation capacity within schools. I think that those can be summarized under four headings, and as you can see from the slide, the first heading is accountability framework, the second one is a reporting function, the third one is a developmental function, and the last one is knowledge generation. So those are the four broad functions of NEDU. We also, in September of last year, had called a group, or expert discussion group. They included evaluation practitioners, teacher unions, academics, and of course we held a strategic conversation focused on what are the processes and structures that we need to do our work. We also had a separate meeting with all the teacher unions on the 15th of April, 2011, and there was broad support expressed by the unions for the bill that is in draft, and the unions felt that there was, however, not enough detail given to the district support that is necessary for quality education. We've also held inside the Department of Education meetings with IQMS, with old school evaluation, and to see how NEDU can be aligned with those particular functions. We, as NEDU, also had made a formal submission to the department to see how we can add value to the department's action plan 2014 and schooling 2025. As we will point out later, since then, we had embarked on a series of visits happen to be in the Western Cape this week because we are visiting schools. We're different schools today in the Western Cape. This is the fifth province that we've been visiting, and we are using that opportunity not only to familiarize ourselves with the landscape, but to develop our own evaluation tools and protocols. Also, in March of 2011, NEDU held an inception conference, and at that inception conference, which is funded by the Flemish, we had people from all over this country, as well as people from Belgium and other parts of the world, Ofsted, and so on, to tell us how they do things. I want to just briefly say that one of the issues is whether NEDU is a watchdog or not, whether it's police. I think that there are 25,000 schools in this country, and it is unlikely that NEDU could visit each and every school in this country. So one of the things we would like to do is to build the capacity of schools to do self accountability. So the top triangle is a section that's getting bigger, and that would be self-evaluation. The part that should be getting smaller is external evaluation. That is what NEDU is doing. So at the end, NEDU should be doing more verification and quality assurance than inspection. So where are we today? Well, maybe that's where we are. Although we seem to not be doing well in self-evaluation at schools. I think it is true to say that if we measure the performance today, we would agree that we have a high cost and a low performing education system. And partly because there is a lack of self-accountability in the school. And so what NEDU is trying to do is to move that line over. And for us, success would mean greater self-accountability, greater self-evaluation in schools in the country. And hopefully, by 2025, we would be able to form only the quality assurance and the verification role. So NEDU's job is, together with the Quality of Learning and Teaching campaign, which is a campaign inside the department, is to move that wall from where it is now to where it needs to be. I have two more slides, Honourable Chair, and then I'm just going to ask my colleagues just to briefly comment on two aspects of our work. If you look at all the evaluation initiatives in South Africa, some of them are international and some of them are local. We have TIMS, we have PILS, we have SACMEC. Those are all international of various forms, and you will notice that they focus largely on learner performance. And then we have annual national assessment and systemic evaluation, which does more of that. NIDU, on the other hand, has to look at learner performance as well as teacher knowledge and teacher practice and actually what happens in the classroom. If I may summarize it, I would like to say that NIDU is there to evaluate the quality of teaching and learning. There are performance management mechanisms such as ICMS. NIDU's job is to look at teaching and learning and report on that. So we hope to, as we have done in the five provinces, focus largely on underperforming schools. We look at key aspects, what we've been doing, both in the Northern Cape 2 weeks ago and in the Western Cape, is to look purely at curriculum delivery, and to look at instructional leadership, and to look at the quality of teaching, particularly in literacy and numeracy. We use the ANA as an indicator, and whatever else we can use to report on the health of the system. And we hope to report to the minister. And we hope through that, Honourable Chair, that there will be a culture of increased accountability in schools, that the structures, the unit of analysis, is bigger than the teacher, is bigger than the school, looking at the whole structure to ensure the quality of learning and teaching takes place. So we are not just looking at teaching. We're looking at the whole support structure. We're also looking at increased curriculum delivery, and we value the opportunity to do independent reporting. There have been some milestones. As I've said, I was appointed on the 1st of July. Since then, there's been a small team of professionals, two of whom are part-time. Mark Patterson and Mr. Gabru is part-time. Dr. Sitoli is there, was part of the department, and now is dedicated to NIDU. We are in the process of developing this draft bill, and I'm going to ask Mr. Gabru to comment on that. We had an inception conference, and that inception conference had produced a report, which report I'll be very happy to share with the honourable members. And as I've said, we are in the process of conducting visits to provinces, to schools, to districts. We visit the offices of HOD and MECs, and we're very happy to be here today, the honour for us to be here today, because we believe this is where our accountability is, and we thank you for that opportunity. There are two things. One is the draft bill, and we would ask Mr. Gabru just to briefly comment on where we are with that. And secondly, we also recognize that NIDU will need to do a scientific sample of schools to see across the country a stratified sample of schools, and that survey of 100 schools is done with an outsourced touch, and we would use that. And I'm going to ask Dr. Sitoli to say how we will use that in constructing our report. And that will supplement our own findings as we move around the schools in the various provinces.
Yeah. this week before. So what we have done is to ask the minister to create a post for 21 evaluators who will support us to collect this information from the hub schools. And so we'll have those people as part of our team structure to collect information from schools. The second thing we've done towards making sure that we have that report for the minister at the end of the financial year was to get experts who would work with us to collect information and write a report on what we see in the 100 schools. We are guided by the budget that we've got in order to get our schools and children people. We have about 6 million that we've got to do this with. So that is why in this financial year we have limited ourselves to our school at a national level and to have 21 people because of the budget that we've got. In the coming years, depending on availability of funding, we may increase the schools that we use as a national sample and probably get more evaluators to go out to schools to work with us. So the experts will work with us in terms of sampling the right, correct schools in the entire country, in terms of quota sharing the evaluation tools that we use, because the credibility of our report depends on the kind of information that we collect. So we need experts to work with us to quota share those tools so that we're able to write a credible report to the minister. And also, they will assist us in terms of writing that report. The plan is that by the end of the financial year, we must have that report in terms of what we find in the minister. Our report, the doctor was saying, is really focusing on how are we doing in the system in terms of teaching and learning. In our regards and our international regards, just keep telling us that we're doing very well as compared to other countries in Africa and elsewhere in the world. Pretty much that's what we're going to do, share about the members in terms of writing that report at the end of the financial year. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Doctor. Is there anything
that you would like to answer? No, Honourable Chair, I'm very happy to answer any questions.
Fine, thanks. That's
follows is that
all the Department of Education has to do is put out a tender for an external agency that has credibility in this field to generate those numbers and to pay whatever you require. And once you have those numbers, the department then goes about improving in those areas where it's doing well. And so the education is provincial, and we have to cascade down to the provinces. You know, that's a simple way of doing it. Now, this we do is not that kind of thing. So when you speak about independence, this is not an independent body. It's not. I mean, it's an arm's length, ministerially appointed run body that generates numbers at arm's length. So the word independent is absolutely and shouldn't be used. Firstly. Secondly, it does more than collect numbers. It also monitors. It's a monitoring function over the school. That's something that the department should do. Yeah. So what is happening here is that you create another bureaucracy at arm's length, certainly from the department. The board is appointed by the minister, and the body reports to the minister. Now, in terms of my definition and understanding of independence, yeah, it's simply inconsistent. Okay, so we need to be truthful about what it is we're creating here. Having said that, there are ways of making this present design more independent than what it presently is, and that's a legislative process, and it's something that we as members of Parliament have to look at. So that is our function, is to make laws and to make those laws consistent with the principles. And the key thing, in fact, has to do with those clauses dealing with governance. They're really quite fundamental. And you went through those very quickly. I read this very, very carefully because it's important to get this right, given the design. And I think that this is something that can be reformed in order to make it more independent and more vigorous, because in the end, the minister needs other numbers. Yeah, and it's got nothing to do with the people involved. Your integrity is without question, and your professionalism is without question. But the design of the body must ensure that you are not compromised, you know, because the minister needs to hear the truth, even if it's not good news. She must hear the bad news in order, in the interest of learning. So that's my comment.
Thank you. The first, I think, has come from up there.
So that we know what's going to happen. Dr. James. But,
Honorable James.
Yeah, Honorable James. Chairperson,
may I just maybe not to contradict, but just for brainstorm, is to say that having heard what Honorable James has said about independence, I think from my side I would like to add that independence is very important and we should keep it. But a worst case scenario should be for NIDO to report to the MNE Commission of Minister Shabane, which also in a sense will compromise your independence. So, but that is, as I said, a worst case scenario. But just for, you know, to add to the debate. Then, Chairperson, I think Honorable Makubela also sort of dealt with some of the issues about quality. The QLTC unit currently in the department, which is also in its baby stage, I imagine, what will be the relationship between you and the QLTC? Since quality learning and teaching is your main. Then I've seen that you will do recommendations and things, but I see a very little on the stretch of the research capacity. What are you valuable to do? Please on the stretch.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Our thanks for the brief but concise and concise but focused presentation. Look, from where I stand there, Chairperson, the first question that I ask myself every time something new comes, I want to see what value is it going to add, what is going to be new with the new structure of organization. And let me just give this background that, look, for me, when you talk about education, I know there are many stakeholders, but for me, teacher, learner are primary, they are fundamental. Usually, if you can get these two right, all other things, you know, all come almost like in a supporting kind of role. I'm trying to link, and I've not been successful. Maybe there's no link. I'm here from the presenter. NIDO and Prof. referred also to, they have consulted with IQMS. They have consulted with the whole school evaluation. But now we say, and it's written somewhere, that in the performance of this function, NID will not appraise or report on an individual educator. And yet in the bill, it is said that it must, in the performance of its function, observe and assess classroom teaching, educator knowledge, and learner knowledge. Now, how do you evaluate a system, a whole? But in the evaluation of the whole, you say, I will never evaluate the individual part of that system. I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And I understand the desire maybe to not encroach, I'm not sure if it's the correct word, into what other officials could do, let's say, in terms of IQMS. But it really beat me, because we might be saying NIDO is not supposed to look at what I consider to be the most important part, teaching and learning. How do I report on teaching and learning if I can't, for example, say I'm going to look at teacher equal, how he's doing. It may not be used for what IQMS, may not be used for salary progression and all those things. But what is wrong? in evaluating the quality of teaching. And in evaluating the quality of teaching, I must evaluate the quality of teachers and how they teach. So I don't understand whether we are just not shooting ourselves in the foot, even before we start. And I know that there are issues, I mean, I've always said issues with IFM, and some other things that we're saying we're looking at the individual teacher, but you don't want to look at a system. It has nothing to do with the performance of learners, for example. And I'm glad that Mr. Kalash is there. You know that we've been talking about whether it is right at this school for all teachers to score 3 and 4 when the school itself is dysfunctional, because it has been happening. Because we have been saying, no, separate IQMS from whole school, almost like whole school evaluation. Look at the performance of the teacher. But how is the performance of the teacher if it can be shown by the performance of learners, for example?
So we are
seeing this more positively as evaluating, which in my understanding is throwing light on, and then helping schools to help themselves, basically. Helping schools to help themselves. And I think that's the only way in which a small group of us could add value to the system. But it is important, as Honourable James pointed out, that we have honest numbers. And I think the point, I take that quite seriously, because otherwise it's not worth doing. So there has to be integrity in our reporting, integrity in the numbers, and we must do that, as Honourable Mashona said, without fear or favour, and without interference of any organ of state. That's what's in the book. Now, that is the vision, how we ensure that we bring that to operational reality, is the point that Honourable James has pointed out, and I think we have to remain sensitive. All I can say, Honourable Chair, is that we may not be a watchdog, as I said earlier, but we're certainly not going to be the lapdog. We're not going to be the lapdog of the department. It's not worth doing. And so we want to make sure that our independence is understood in the way that both Honourable James and Honourable Smiles has pointed out, and we will make sure that we have the necessary legislative principles, and with the help of this committee and others, I'm sure we will be able to build in those assurances. Honourable Makabela raised a question about the quality assurance and how that relates to other quality assurance mechanisms that does exist in the department. And I think Pariachi is here, and if my understanding is wrong, he could maybe add his own understanding of that, Honourable Chair. But my understanding is that any employer has the right to do performance management on the people that work for them. It has to be the case. None of the teachers work for LIDU. LIDU is an independent body. So we look at their performance in a different way to which the department is looking at. So we do not give any advice on financial incentives and promotion. We will declare on the quality of the teaching, as I've done today, sat in a class, and I gave input both to the teacher and the principal about the lesson that I've observed. And my colleague who was with me is also. And we do that all the time. The purpose is, I think if I may just say, Honourable Chair, that if I step back from all of this, then I say the whole education system is there for one purpose, and that is that teaching and learning takes place in the classroom. So when we go to a school, we go straight to a classroom. I don't believe we've not had any problems so far, except in one province, but even then it wasn't a wall-to-wall of the problem. But even the union had no objection to us going straight into the classroom. Then we go and check with the principal based on our earlier conversation with the principal. I think the other issue is the issue of compliance. I think that the whole school evaluation is good. There's nothing wrong with the system. But it has no teeth. And so nobody can actually say, I'll come back in 3 months and make sure that what you suggested is actually happening. Neither does that. We may not be able to cover 25,000 schools, but we will cover the 82 districts. And it's the work of the again, if I may say, Honourable Chair, and it sounds trite and common sense, but the system will work perfectly if everybody does what they're supposed to do. Common sense. So all that needed us is to make sure that that happens. Now, the department's quality assurance mechanisms are there to make sure that, and IQMS is one of them. The minister suggested that whole school evaluation falls under NIDU. We're trying to understand exactly what that means. So we don't have total challenge on that, and any advice on that would be helpful. But IQMS is not a leader function. That's a departmental function. Then just very briefly, Honourable Chair, I think Ina asked about, so what is this thing? Where are we? I think that, if I may just say, that neither has been given before, predates me, 3 years in total to establish itself. The 1 year I wasn't there, somebody else was there. I came in about a year ago on a two-year contract. I don't think anyone of us here, except Dr. Sitoli, who really is on loan from the department, is there on permanent basis. We hope that by early next year, the bill would have gone through, completed its passage, and when it's enacted, we then would have the other structure that's referred to in the bill. My expectation is that my brief is to establish NIDA and my contract ends at the end of June next year. Honourable de Gaulle has added the question, what value does NIDA add? I think that's an important question. I think it's similar to what Honourable James has asked. And I think we must confront that question correctly. I don't think we have any vested interest in establishing another layer of bureaucracy that actually doesn't add any value. And I think it's time that we confront that question. And I think that we have to make sure that we are clear as to what value it adds. Honourable de Coppo has been at pains to point out that NIDA seems to sidestep the importance of an individual educator being assessed. We do not report to the department in this sense. We evaluate for accountability. We also evaluate for development. And I think particularly the unions have been sensitive to us not repeating the pattern of the old inspection. The person sitting in the back of your classroom doesn't say a word, writes a lot of things, and then runs to the department to report. I think that we want to give honest feedback. We want to also make sure that feedback can be used to improve practice. But also we aggregate the data, and I think that is Honourable James's point. When we aggregate the data, the public must know what it is that we say to the minister, and it must be very clear that we will do so, as we've said, with our fear of favour, we will be as accurate as we possibly can. And Honourable, I've already commented on Honourable Mishwana's concern. Honourable Shishi says, how will these evaluators be identified? I think it's a different question. They are provincially, they will be provincially based. There will be 9 at the more senior level, deputy director level, and then 2 or so at the other, at assistant director level. But they will be provincially based and not national. The national team is the team we have myself, we have Dr. Pizzoli, we have 2 part-time people, Mark Hodgson and Mr. Dabu, and we have just appointed, I think, the other question that you've raised is the issue of research. That we've just appointed a researcher that started on the 1st of September this year. And that researcher will not only generate new research, but collect whatever data is available to report on the health of the system.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you,
Chuck and Mike. Honorable Chair, Honorable Barachi will not answer any questions. But I think what would be important, the department should tell us when it is this bill coming to Parliament before around it. Advocate Linda Kitt.
Thank you very much. The draft is finalized now. We've got a draft bill that you can submit now to the structure. We last week, 2 weeks ago, we submitted it to HEDCOM. It was approved by the heads of education department. We will now submit it to the Council of Education Ministers, and the next meeting is on the 2nd of September. for their approval that the bill be published for public comment. The bill that they asked to be published in the government will be for public comment, and the public, the comments from public will be evaluated and on merit incorporated in the bill, and then thereafter the bill will be submitted to the cabinet committee, and after that it will be submitted to the sector advisors for certification, and then it will be tabled.
May I just ask another question? You expect this to be completed before the end of the financial year?
That's the hope that we will, that it will be tabled in Parliament by before the end of the financial year.
But actually complete this, even by through MCLC. I think yes.
For clarity, the end of the financial year, the end of the calendar year.
Apart from the end of the financial year, because we have still the 31st of March. That's what I want to know. Should it be still going? Fine. That's your answer that I'd like to have from this person. On Rovina?
Sorry to expand on that, but there are various tools that we've been looking at. There is a tool that had been developed already before we got into the department, before NIDA was envisaged, that it's a self-evaluation tool, where we want every school in the country to upload an electronic version of how they describe themselves. We already have data, EVIS data on ANA and all this stuff. The tool that is being developed on the Rodina is really the one that is being outsourced, and Dr. Sitoli has pointed out the whole purpose of that is to look at what's available and then to refine them and to version them for our purposes. But I'll ask Dr. Sitoli on the chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. What we did, we issued a small tender for proposals to organizations that have done this work. At this point, we're at a point where we've been reviewing those proposals with the future procuring the next steps to project. So the process is not finished yet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
With
the financial year. Yes,
Mr. Padak. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The bill would be basically, in terms of the time frames, to go through all the processes, will only be enacted in the 2012 budget. It may come into in the first half of the year to Parliament itself, and the committee will probably, and then the process will go through. It's all subject to the, you know, the different requirements that we have.
Thank you for that. At least we know now what things that mean. Professor McPhee, I don't think we'll take any questions now, because you can read approaches, and certain processes are broken down. And I'm sure because there are some questions in people's minds, which we can really doubt, you know, questions that they will ask. So there will be a need, you know, even while we're doing the annual report, that will ask me to come back today to us. Well, this is going to be part of the annual report of the department. I'd like to thank you for being present today, you and your team, Professor. And I thank also the committee for the comments, because the comments were made and questions were asked. And I think it's very useful and encouraging. And as we go along, I'm sure we'll go through the work, see what's written there, and then we'll ask questions to the minister, or the same questions to the department itself. But I'm sure we will be meeting you. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
would like to close our meeting because there are members that normally take back. And, you know, I don't think there'll be, you know, that like we're running at certain times. We're going on to the party now. And the big teaching is part of the, you know, we'll lead the dedication. And then we're looking at the documents in front of us. Because if we didn't do this branch while we were in Pretoria, we're looking at strategic planning and reporting. And as far as we'll reach up to me and see how this process works and follow on the side of the department.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, good afternoon. We have a fairly small delegation here compared to the actual state of this particular branch. And we are very, very pleased, Honourable Chair, to have this opportunity because we really felt bit left out when we couldn't be accommodated in your first round at the department itself. We would then admit, I think, more of the members of the branch itself. This branch is called the Strategic Planning and Reporting Branch, but it's actually, when I asked my colleague to call up the organizational structure, I will expand on exactly how we're going to approach this afternoon's briefing session. And I'm almost convinced that we are not going to be able to complete all of it, although we will attempt as far as possible to cover the full spread of what this branch does. In terms of the presentation, I'm just going to give a very brief introduction, and then we will go on to the two areas of emphasis in order to create the background to the areas that we're going to be reporting on, and the first of which will be that of strategic planning itself, the organizational structure, but I just want to answer that. This particular branch comprises the following chief directors. It is that of Ministerial Services, which serves both the office of the Deputy Minister and the Minister. And we also, as a second unit in the branch, have the unit which is headed up by Mr. Panyata Lesuthi on my left, which is Media Liaison and National and Provincial Coordinator and Communication. We have, as a third unit in the branch, the Strategic Planning and Coordination Chief Directorate, and Mr. Hedekasir will be speaking to one of the elements of that particular Chief Directorate, which is Strategic Planning itself. The second part of that particular unit is that of the Strategic Coordination and the Secretariat Services of the Department, and it caters for all the statutory functions of the Department of the CEM and HEDCOM meeting, but all the other related meetings. The fourth area is that of international relations and UNESCO, which covers the work of the multilateral affairs and bilateral, as well as Africa and Middle East, and that of global partnerships. We will forward this particular structure to you. I have some hard copies, but I don't think it's really going to serve our purpose right now. I'll just gather through those areas. And the fifth area is that of legal and legislative services. And Mr. Yerkes was here, and he'll be able to speak to one of those directors and also to the processes underway there. The sixth area is that of the administration and the office of the DG. And that sits at the tail end of this particular organizational structure over here on screen right now. I want to point out that in this particular branch, we have incorporated the functions of the previous office of the DG, which was a branch of its own, and this has been deconstructed to incorporate the strategic planning and legal services components which were previously in that office of the DG. I want to also point out, just before I ask my colleagues to present in turn, as I've indicated, that in the case of these six units, they are headed only by two chief directors that are currently in place. The others are yet to be activated. The two chief directors are Mr. Lusisi on my left and Mr. Ngobeni, who serves as the chief of staff of the ministry. In the directorates that are listed there, we have 5 vacant directorates, and the rest are served by deputy directors. So this is a structure which is very thinly populated, although it has wide and expansive functions as it serves the department. And as we present today, you will find that the challenge of our engagement of how to reorganize and reconfigure the structure of the department has posed a particular set of exciting challenges, but at the same time serious constraints on the part of really being able to run with the current capacity. However, I think I must say, just in the presence of the portfolio committee today, that I'm surrounded by very capable and very committed members of the team. It's unfortunate that I'm rather lonesome here in my gender representation, because I do think that we have other members of staff. But as I said, we have very many vacancies which we hope to fill in due course, and we will see a far better balance of skills and gender representation. But that's not to put any of the colleagues off from actually following up on the community. I say that in Jeff's colleagues, but honourable members, but I also say that with a fair amount of seriousness, because I do think that as a team we've been able to perform some critical tasks, but with real concerns about how much better we could have performed in the presence of more capacity. I want to immediately hand over, Honourable Chair, to my colleague on my right, Mr. Gerrit Hoetzeer, who is a recent acquisition in this branch, and he has come from the social mobilization team to join us in strategic planning and reporting. And in the context of the new framework of the provided both by Treasury and the DPME, the guidance for our compliance reporting aspect, together with the new framework around the outcomes-based approach of government, has posed a particular challenge for us in terms of how we align both our strategic planning and our annual performance planning to the outcomes approach of government, but also to the challenges of how we now restructure both the way in which we plan our strategic plan as a national department in alignment with our sector plan, which you are all familiar with by now, the action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025. So we take this as the point of departure, Honourable Chair, to provide the context that we had hoped we would have had when we presented our first quarterly performance report, because it's the backdrop of this strategic planning framework that will provide a better understanding of how we want to be aligning both our reporting processes with that of the oversight function. And Mr. Kutsir will begin to outline exactly how we see that process unfolding and how we hope to work in alignment with the program of the oversight processes, both in this committee and that of the select committee process, where we are able then to align those reporting frameworks and reporting timeframes with those dates for our presentation here to the board. I want to immediately hand it over to Mr. Kutsir, and I'll round up at the end of all of the presentation again. Thank you. Thanks, Tarak.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. It is for me a privilege again to address you. And it is not our purpose to go into details around planning and reporting within the Department of Basic Education, but to give you a broad overview and to focus on the context in which this happened. I think we take our cue, and this is how I've outlined the presentation, from our leaders in government. And I will therefore start off by just focusing and pausing at what is government's planning and delivery model, how the basic education system under the leadership of our Minister, the Minister of Basic Education, have tackled this challenge put to us by the broader government, and then thirdly, how the department is putting in place, what is the department doing in plotting the way forward for the Department of Basic Education. Now, I think if we take our cue from the planning commission and the release of the diagnostic report, then the challenge that has been placed before us as a broader government, but in particular the Department of Basic Education, is how do we ensure that our country continues the growth curve that will take us into the future towards 2030. And I think the diagnostic report of the NPC have clearly identified the challenges that we are facing. And although the Department of Education, Basic Education, has already had a strong sense of what those challenges are, and most of our programs that the honourable members will be aware of have been structured in such a way to address those challenges. But I thought it would be just be important to show that this is where we take our cue from, and this is where we want to contribute and make a difference in the lives of our learners, our parent communities, and our teacher communities in our country. What we've also learned from the leadership of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency is that we need to focus on outcomes, that it's not just about producing another set of guidelines, but that it is about how the guidelines and how to ensure there is an impact, there's an outcome that results in a better life for our people and that results in quality basic education for our learners. Therefore, our planning needs to be based on evidence. We share across government a planning language. It's about ongoing learners learning, for instance, from international best practice and to see what happens in Southern Africa and in Africa and in other developmental states in the world. And then also acknowledging the important role that is played by the organization of culture within the Department of Basic Education in itself. And I think my DDG has indicated the kind of challenges that we face in this specific branch. And in the end, that contributes as well to the kind of organizational culture that one will find in the Department of Basic Education. And we therefore need to take very clear and active steps to ensure that is addressed within the Department of Basic Education. What are the implications for us as a department? And what we've learned from the leadership that we've received from broader government and in particular from the Presidency is that we need to be a department that continually prioritizes learning outcomes, that our actions are based on proper understanding of what is happening in schools, and that there's consistency and intelligibility in the education policies and materials that we make available to schools, to departments, and to parent communities. That we are a developmental department that acknowledges we're not getting everything right yet, but that we are improving. And I think that is what inspires us in what we are doing. And also the fact that we are not alone in this. And I think for myself personally, just in the last 5 or 6 months, the leadership that we've received from this particular committee is much appreciated as well. And then that we need to be departmental officials who are efficient and respectful. Our minister has spoken earlier this year of a delivery-driven basic education, and we therefore take our cue from her in terms of what it is that we are doing, what we are planning, where we put our focus and our action to. And the Department of Basic Education Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan therefore summarizes the priorities of the Department of Basic Education. But it doesn't exist on its own. It is clearly aligned and linked with the delivery agreement and the action plan to 2014, the sector plan, which guides the work that we do in the Department of Basic Education. And I think during this current financial year and in the next financial year, going forward, the department will continue to work to strengthen the delivery of quality education. We have and we acknowledge our crucial monitoring, policy making, and leadership responsibility within the sector of education in our country. And we acknowledge and we put forward and upfront the vital role that provinces play in the delivery of quality education. And we also acknowledge the role of key education stakeholders, including citizens, that in making education society. So these are the principles that underlie and inspire our decision making and our strategic vision within the Department of Basic Education and within the system. And I think here it's basically just a very brief response of tackling the issue that, for example, has been listed within the National Planning Commission Diagnostics Report. We have not listed all the problem statements here, but we are all aware of the challenges that we are faced around the poor learner performance, and this was highlighted in the annual national assessment and in the report that was released in June this year. And then we also know that we cannot expect learners to perform better in schools that are not functional. And we have in our interventions identified a number of strategic goals, and we've identified the delivery strategy that we want to follow in terms of those strategic goals. And there is some cross-cutting principle that I just want to highlight, and those are that the school is the focus of change, optimal resource utilization, so using the resources that we have available, implement school to district to head office quality support process. So it's about that value chain that exists from the national department to the provincial head office to the district office and to the school, and ensuring that that value chain is strengthened and supported along the line. And then to improve systems, the system definition and reskilling, decision-making and accountability, and then very important, community involvement and the mobilization of communities. And I think the recently released accord also points in that direction. Then we have the targets. Our targets should focus on the learner, on teachers, on schools, on district offices, and at provincial level. And the outcome is a sustainable education improvement for all our learners. So what will our planning then focus on? Our planning focuses on strengthening learner performance, particularly in literacy and numeracy, in the foundational grades and performance in mathematics and science, standardized assessment and systemic evaluation to measure whether learners are achieving the curriculum outcome, and to identify the key areas in the curriculum that require improvement. A textbook for each child in each subject, preparation of the system for the implementation of the CAPS, which will happen from January 2012, focused and planned teacher development, with particular attention paid to supporting teachers in underperforming high schools and their feeder schools. Reworking the roles and priorities for district offices to support teaching and learning in schools, improving systems of accountability and service delivery at district, provincial, and national level. I think that has also been highlighted very clearly in the recent National Planning Commission Diagnostic Report. Accelerated schools infrastructure delivery to ensure the provision of sound infrastructure, and especially with focus on eradicating mud and unsafe structures, and to provide improved resources such as laboratories, libraries, and administration blocks to existing schools. Ensure that access to Grade R is universalized and that Grade R provides quality programs to compensate for socioeconomic disadvantage and low family literacy. And then finally, to strengthen nutrition and health programs and the creation of conditions whereby learners and teachers are safe at school. And lastly, just in this framework that we are trying to illustrate, I think it's crucial that in planning, that we plan in such a way that we link budgeting, monitoring, and reporting. I think this is in line with broader government thinking and leadership from broader government, especially from Treasury and the Presidency. We acknowledge, however, that this is still, that we are still learning in this process, and that we may make mistakes along the line, but this is the direction that we've committed ourselves to go. And this is just to illustrate how we see this relationship, and we value the oversight and leadership that we receive from the Parliament, and in particular this committee, but also from Presidency and the two ministries within Presidency, Treasury, the Auditor General, and then also from the Department of Public Service and Administration. And this oversight pertains to the policies that are being developed within the DBE that have a national impact and that are supposed to roll out on a national level, but also more recently through our education sector planning approach, which is done through Action Plan to 2014 and the delivery agreement of the minister. Those two documents is the flagship documents of the Department of Basic Education. From those documents, we derive the work that will point our way on all the levels of education system. So those are our marching orders within that. And we are quite far advanced in finalizing the annual performance plan for 2014, and I'm sure the detailed version of this will be made public very soon. Honorable Chairperson and members, just the rest of the diagram just shows the cycle of planning that needs to happen, that we identify the desired impact, we develop our strategic plan, we identify our performance indicators, we construct our annual performance plan, and we get a budget for all the activities, we set our targets and allocate resources, we implement, and then we report. And those reports are to those oversight bodies. We report to the Portfolio Committee, we report to the Presidency, the Treasury, and ultimately we also report to the Auditor General and the DPSA. That happens on a quarterly basis. We also report on an annual basis, and very soon we will present to this committee our annual report for the financial year 2010 and 2011. And as such, this cycle will then continue, and we will continue to engage within this framework with this portfolio committee as well. We weren't able to see this, but we thought we'll just put this up. And what it basically just says is that from the previous diagram, which is broad, here we've gone in more detail, and we are looking at what are the different places around across the year when we need to present plans, when we need to present reports, when certain budget reports need to be released, and it's trying to get a broad operational map of what needs to happen on a national, provincial, and school level, and how can we influence and ensure that all three of these levels speak to each other in terms of planning, reporting, and monitoring. Thank you, Jacob.
Thanks a lot. Over to Ms. Carter. Thank you much, Chair. We have, in the next presentation, I'll be calling on Patrick Lucas to present on the legal and legislative section of this particular branch, and he will then outline not only the areas that he's responsible for, but also the processes that, as they relate to other sections of the branch and across the department in terms of the legal advice of as part of the national system.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you very much for this opportunity to present here. By way of introduction, the legal services section of the department consists of the chief director, as Vivian indicated earlier in our organogram. It consists of the chief director, that position currently is vacant, and director of legal services position that I am in, and then three deputy directors. One is with legislative services and one is with legal services, and then we also have a language practitioner. If we can just look at the strategic objectives of the unit, the strategic objectives are as follows: with regard to legislative services, that section is mainly responsible for the development, processing, and implementation of legislation that and impact on of the constitution and international instruments on education. They also provide advice to the ministry, the EG, and other units in the department. They also focus on human rights in education and advise the parents, learners, and the general public on education matters. With regards to legal services, that section is mainly responsible for the management of education at the department, as well as the provincial education department. They're also responsible for the management of contracts, memoranda of understanding, and other legal instruments. We are currently busy with following the regulations. But before I get to that aspect, I just want to, with this slide, indicate the process that we follow with all our legislation, whether it's regulation or whether it's votes or acts of parliament. The first aspect is to do the research on the existing legislation and regulations that cater for the needs of education across the nation and remain consistent with international trends. Secondly, after we've developed the regulation or bill, we will then publish that for public comment, and they will be brought to consultation with the public. We also will get the approval of the Head of Education Committee, as well as the Council of Education Ministers, as well as the Cabinet Committee. Thereafter, the bill will then go to the office of the chief legal advisor and the general office and to get the necessary certification, and then the bill will be sent to Parliament. We will also, as we've done with the Bella bill, assist the committees of Parliament to deliberate, amend, and approve the bill, and then we will assist with the promulgation of that bill into an Act of Parliament. That is with the bill that is sent to the President's office, and the President will sign it into law. Currently, with the Basic Education Rules Amendment Bill, that is going to follow that process. The bill was passed by the National Assembly, and it will now go to the President's office for assent. We are currently, also with this slide, busy with some draft regulations that forthcoming in terms of the Ethical Schools Act as well as other legislation. The regulations that we're currently busy with is the regulations of Section 38A regulations. I will briefly discuss each one of them. I just want to enumerate them all here. We're also busy with the amendments to the safety regulation, as well as regulations for the prevention, support, and counseling of pregnant learners and pregnant learners with HIV and AIDS in public schools, as well as regulations for the educational assistance of victims identified by a PRC. The Section 38 regulation, members will recall that in terms of the South African Schools Act, currently in schools, some educators get paid extra by the government bodies. Now, the effective for that in 2008, the South African Schools Act was amended to provide that before government educator expect employee extra money for services rendered by that particular educator to the school, such governing body must first obtain the permission of the head of department. That was brought in by the CSA of South Africa Schools Act. Now, currently, some of the provinces indicated that it's not easy to implement that specific provision, and they requested departments to bring regulations to regulate that aspect further. Now, with this particular regulations, what we have set out is just to indicate more in detail the processes that need to be followed in order to give effect to that particular provision. And it's just set out more in detail how a governing body needs to apply to the head of the department, the information that must be that application to the head of the department, and so forth. So it provides us further detail on that. Currently, these regulations was approved by the Aids of Education Committee. It will be submitted to the Council of Education Ministers in the next meeting, which will be the 2nd of September. We currently also busy with the safety regulations, and there are certain aspects that we are just looking at in more detail. Some of them relate to food safety in schools. Some of them relate to the presence of use of toxic chemicals in schools, and the banning of the use of liquor in schools. So those particular amendments just give greater clarity on those aspects and regulate some of the safety aspects in schools. These regulations are currently still in draft format. It must still go through the processes in the department. After we've developed a draft, we will submit it to the internal structures of the department and also head comment here. Then, in terms of the pregnancy regulations, you will recall that there was a state in the Free State dealing with the pregnancy. I will speak more in detail on that particular case later on, but basically the issue with the pregnancy regulation is to regulate the issue with regard to learner safety and with regard to pregnant learners, as well as learners who have contracted HIV/AIDS. But most importantly also, these particular regulations also prohibit that the expulsion of a learner on the basis of pregnancy or the taking of any disciplinary action against a particular learner based on pregnancy of that learner. Then with regards to the regulations for the educational assistance of victims identified by the PRC, these regulations were developed by the Department of Justice, and they provide assistance to victims identified by the PRC by giving such victims, providing them with bursaries. Those particular bursaries for basic education will be administered by the Department of Basic Education. Another function of the legislative unit is to deal with the administration and various services after the alternative of the HEDCOM Legal Subcommittee. The structure of HEDCOM as the Head of Education Committee established a legal subcommittee that consists of the legal advisors of all the provinces as well as national. And that particular committee meets at least four times a year to deliberate on all the legal issues in education. also manage human rights issues, international conventions of children's rights, and support provinces. We support provinces, all that is brought to the meeting of the of legal support for discussion. And then the structure is also used as a monitoring tool to evaluate implementation of legislation and compliance of provinces with particular legislation. We had visited the beginning of the year all 9 provinces to monitor compliance of provincial education departments with education legislation to ensure that there's a common understanding on how to implement legislation and that where particular legislation requires provinces to do certain things that those things or those that be done that has been implemented. Then I want to go into the next unit, which is the legal services. They're mainly responsible for litigation. We have quite a number of court cases, and I just want to focus now on 4 particular court cases that got a national impact. Okay. The first one that I want to speak to is the Afrikaanse Taalraad, this is the Minister of Education, this is the case that's currently in the Equality Court in Johannesburg. Basically, the issue here is that the Afrikaanse Taalraad brought its application and it said that the department is discriminating against Afrikaans learners by the virtue of the fact that the department is not, that Afrikaans is not one of the priority areas affected for by the Funchal and South Adversity scheme. You will recall that the Funchal and South Adversity scheme was created to cater for or to attract educators in the priority areas of scarce subjects in the form of, like, for example, mathematics, science, English, and African language, and so forth. In this particular case, they indicated that, of course, Afrikaans is not listed, all the other languages are listed as priority areas of Afrikaans. The department is discriminating unfairly against the department is busy defending the case. We submitted our client affidavit, and in our client affidavit, we indicated that, and we also used statistics to indicate that Afrikaans learners, in fact, receive the most of learning. And then Afrikaans learners, Afrikaans educators are not excluded from the basic or receiving the most, because they can, if they take Afrikaans in relation with another language or another priority area, receive such learning. We have comprehensively indicated that the majority of the educators or the students that currently receive these universities are Afrikaans students. So the claim that there is discrimination is actually not the correct one. Then the next case that I you will also, hopefully you've already seen the documentation. The next one is the Alco case, it's the case that I was alluding to earlier. And this is the one dealing with the pregnancy issue. And basically, in this particular case, these learners were expelled from school schools based on pregnancy. These learners were pregnant. And in terms of these two schools, school policy, these learners had to be suspended for a period of 6 months. the head of the department they intervened and indicated to the schools that these schools are acting contrary to the legislation and also contrary to the constitution. You will recall that in terms of the South African Schools Act, Section 9 of the South African Schools Act provides for instances where a learner can be suspended, not only up to a period of 7 days, and thereafter the permission of the head of the department must be obtained before to extend that period of suspension. These particular schools acted contrary to that particular provision and was on the basis of that, as well as the constitution. Constitution provides in Section I that cannot discriminate against pregnancy. And also, in terms of Section 38, the best interest and up to the best interest of the learner's paramount important is concerning the child. Based on those arguments, the department then intervened, the department then instructed the schools to let the return to school to class. However, the schools then took the department to court, and the judge ruled in favor of the school, indicating that in terms of school's policy, only the school has authority over can do what they've done in terms of the school policy, and that the department doesn't have any authority to be faithful to such instruction to these particular schools. This case, the department is currently appealing and says the minister also joined. We'll await the outcome of this particular one. But also, what this particular case also illustrated is that the entire need to regulate the certain aspects and prevent this kind of thing from happening again, and maybe proper legislation to regulate this aspect. The next question I want to focus on is SR Kubeka with MC Pendleton and others. In this particular case, just by way of background, in some of the provinces in the country, part of the provinces, some of the head of departments upgraded the salary scale of deputy chief education specialist or circuit manager, contrary to the provisions of the Employment and Education Act. And there was then a decision by the head of the department acted also with it, contrary to the legislation, that these payments were reversed. You will recall that in terms of the Employment and Education Act, it's the prerogative of the minister to determine the terms and conditions of employment of educators. And the minister is for the purpose of also the employer of educators. Now, in this particular case, the heads of the department did for themselves to upgrade the terms and conditions of these particular educators. There was an arbitration award based in by consent that these particular educators' position be reversed. However, in terms of this particular court case, and then there was instruction by the education committee that the payments made to these particular educators be reversed. Now, in terms of the court case, the implementation of the arbitration award was safe, and currently there is a new application to set aside the arbitration award that was obtained by the NPC. The next case is a case from the Eastern Cape, and this is application brought against the Eastern Cape Education Department to direct that the ECD decision not to fill all vacant substantial posts at the Department of Public Schools in its performance to the 2010 post establishment judiciary review and set aside. Now, for these particular schools, there were many vacant posts. And the department is told that basically the school is asking that, that those particular vacant posts be filled. The matter was settled out of court on the basis that the department reverted those posts and filled those posts. However, there is now another twist, and of course, the Section 100 intervention, the settlement was entered into by Mr. Mogherini, who is the national intervention coordinator. The head of the department is that now went to court now recently to ask that that settlement be set aside. With this slide, as part of our job is to look at international agreements and assist our colleagues here. I just indicated this slide that the agreement that we're working on, and I don't want to go further into this. And then the next one is also dealing with domestic agreements. I was just want to indicate that this could apply some of the major agreements that we've been working on. The one is dealing with curriculum innovation, and that's for the privileged schools, that is the one with UBG part of the telco, and that's to provide internet connection to schools. And the next one is with the school infrastructure, and that's dealing with the implementation of schools, and then the other one is dealing with the TV program. That is the MOU that PBSA on the MUD schools and providing basic infrastructure to schools. And then the last one is just the Section 100 intervention, the MOU that we need to take provincial government. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I've asked the solicitor to do the communications by next. We will speak to that while I call up the item on the screen. I'll just check and see where I am. The solicitor could start in the meanwhile, and I'll call up the course is live output for school, and I'm sure the members would like to interact with the other board. And we will make a ruling on the other reports. It's very important that we do these reports in detail. So, Mr. Chukwujasawa, members, with all the reports we received now, including on what the last report of yesterday, I'd like members just to just ask questions on these reports. Was only like I just to go through the report and leave it as such. I'll start with Honorable Kogo, then Honorable Hanyako, Honorable Flash, Honorable Mishwana, and then Honorable Nina. Honorable Kogo.
Thank you very much. Just although I'll use the two cases as an example, I've mentioned, you know, discussing the merits or demerits of the case, but just the principle involved. Starting with the one where we are told that the officials who are going to intervene sign an agreement, and then the provincial head of department seeks to have that agreement set aside. Does that principle I'm trying to understand it and I'm failing. I guess if I understand very well, also with this issue of Kubeka, let us have it. I'm not very sure what is the issue, because if EDCOM has directed that people acted ultra direct, is this my understanding that what would matter, what KZNDOE is effectively by defending the matter and going against what EDCOM has said? Again, I just want to be held in terms of the principle. But if EDCOM is a structure where all heads of departments are there, I don't understand. I think for now, in the respect of, for the sake of time, I'll post the chat.
Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just some clarity on the slide number 6. It's very small, but yeah, okay. It's on the delivery driven basic education system, just below that one, under focused learning interventions. This has to do with standardized assessment tools. I just wanted to know how this, or to what extent will this differ from the, you know, diagnostic materials that were produced by the Human Sciences Research Council in the past. Are they going to be psychometric in nature, or what would be the nature of this instrument? That is the first one. Now, the second one is about the pregnancy issue. I don't know. Now, you see, I don't get this thing very well. When it comes to the withdrawal of the student from school because of pregnancy, which sometimes can be seen as expulsion, because in my opinion, I would not really see it as expulsion, but just a withdrawal for the safety of the learner, even the school itself. Because I'm just thinking deeply about the rural areas, where there are no facilities, and we have this learner who is in the school, maybe up to the period of delivery, and something happens here. Who is going to be responsible here? The parents are not there, the kid is there, the teachers are there, the kid needs to be assisted. I'm thinking about all those type of things, because in future it might be that somebody is charged for certain things, and I don't know if some thought has been given to this. Of course, another thing is, are the parents allowed to withdraw the learner from school in terms of how they understand their pregnancy? Because the learner may say, I want to go on, and the parents may say, no, you can't go on, because, well, you know, cultural things can also play a role in this. And then, I'm mixing things. Another thing is the issue of performance. If a learner has been withdrawn or has withdrawn herself, delivered, and she wants to come back, depending, of course, on the period of absence, don't we think this will have, you know, an effect on performance at the end of the year? The learner has been absent from school for, say, 6 months because they are still you know, assisting the kid to grow up to a certain level, and then come back and want to be in school. I'm just thinking about this, that are we going to make things very difficult for society to try to, you know, defend some of the things that may be really defensible in terms of old-fashioned things? That's all. Those are the things that are, you know, running in my head now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I have two questions, one on focused planning interventions and the one on the domestic agreement. With regard to the planning interventions, Chairperson, I just want to know from the department about the grade R monitoring and evaluation tool or mechanism that's yet to be established. That was reported during the last report we received from the Department of Health. And why I'm asking this question is that we need to make sure that what we are doing in HR is the right thing for the correct thing. Otherwise, we will be throwing money into a dark hole. I'm also saying this against what the minister had said yesterday about us as MPs not properly doing our oversight work, just to check numbers, not checking quality. So I want to make sure that we are not losing out on quality when it comes to great art. So that mechanism is very important, and we need to do something about it, if it is not there yet. Chairperson, with regard to the Eastern Cape, the intervention, I would imagine nobody is above the law, but it seems to me that the ECED is above the law. Now my question to the legislative unit is, to what extent do you support Minister Angie Jackson? And I would like to ask the question, did you provide or assist the minister with the much needed management, let's say a management letter or a management plan, of which there must be in that management plan suspension of power, so that the continued position of the current or the incumbent head of department of the Eastern Cape can either be stopped or be sort of extended. But to fight off who is accountable and who should be in control of the budget is not a conducive situation. So my question then is, let you support or help the minister to have that kind of management plan or letter, because without that, you cannot implement Section 100. It should be there, I would imagine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the presenter. Very short question, but I thank you. The first one, I want to acknowledge the literature is not a question, maybe it's the acknowledgement that, or the apology that they are not saying that they are coming. When you started to speak that say you apologize and the other, the dialogue is not alive. It's like we are hearing this many times and we are shaking issues. If what the reality is behind closed doors, are these higher positions made nominated, and is there anything that we can do? Number two, what was the, when there were people at the school of African High School, no, they asked, when there were people who were sitting at the school of African High School, I wasn't told to speak. Because that's what I heard, that most recipients of brothers are African. Is it African school or African school? Either way, I'm taking this as we can be told the relation that is language. And then the department, somebody said that they're not trying to locate where it was. The department of education not taking authority. Unless it's like, I need to tell you, what my understanding is that the department has to own the school. As far as education and issues. Maybe I'm missing out on the principle of policy that I don't know. See, in public schools, that was not spoken about, and like nobody talks about it when it comes. But I'm checking, why do we all have technology schools making people take fees when it's like free speeches? What is the department saying? Because the fees there are like private schools. I know for a fact, if you want to give you an interview. And number five, can we agree that as you feed it to make sure that they promote the flag?
Thank you.
and that made them they went to take their education that those who want them to understand that what's necessary and looking at the country and spending are we what is the difference of the education, how far the production are to get them to be culture and high or and again like we're talking about on working we work on the road of the business of the even here we look at international social culture to look at the government of 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 can this prevent us then? What is the strategy that we need to do with the property? Because as for now, there are no such kind of property in our country. And can we see when one of our organizations, top of the executive intervention, which we just mentioned here, one of the huge misunderstandings that I think we have observed is even around the issue of the fact that where you see what province is talking about this, you know, this going to one province. Maybe it should be good to one day, you get a breakdown of the budget, how everybody gets to for us. So that you can do provinces don't really think such a way to pay much money coming to one province where we don't know we never had a breakdown, how are you going to judge that to make that most money? Lastly, on the draft regulation, there's a little where you talk of the regulations for the prevention, support, and culture of pregnancy, what they mean now, and pregnancy, then after speech and the other speech concern, why do you understand the pregnancy and speech and the not putting the market on the same day, why are we not giving that as a regulation for prevention, support, and culture for pregnancy and to have speech, because even those determined it will be covered in the state without isolating them now and happening to the right time. I think we're taking the stigma and trying to allow the country and the natural and the
thanks a lot for that. And then we have a can you just explain Section 58 to us? You know, it comes to the regulation thing. It seems as though I'm not understanding what is it all about. So the one to ask a question, but I first want to know whether I understand it. So, thank you. And it's also, you may answer.
Excuse me, the chair has got
you first want me to deal with that explanation before I go to the topic. Section 38A, well, I'm sorry, these regulations together with the provisions in the South African Schools Act. Now, in terms of Section 38A provides for instances where the governing body of a particular school pay educators or the principal extra money for providing services to the school. For example, it may be, I'm just trying to make an example, instances where the principal is maybe working after hours or over weekends or what the case may be.
Thank you. For example, like when it comes to the ex-model student school, the principal gets back the salary from the department and then he still gets the salary from, he gets a car, he gets a husband, you know, things like that. Yeah. You can explain how
that. That is absolutely correct. Now, the legislation was then changed
I'm just doing this explanation because one must read these two together. The legislation was in change in about 2008, and then in terms of that particular provision, Section 38A was then brought in. Now, the main provision of Section 38A is that the governing body cannot just pay educators extra money without getting the permission of the head of the department for that. Because these are state employees, they are not governing body employees, so that the employer must first give permission for that extra work to be done. I've got a provision here, and I'll just quickly read it to you. A governing body may not pay or give to state employee employed in terms of the Employment of Educators Act any unauthorized remuneration, other financial benefit or benefit in kind. Then the next provision provides that the governing body may apply to the employer for approval to pay a state employee any payment contemplated in Sub-Regulation 1. Now, that's what's in the Act. Now, the regulations is just further expanding on them and just giving a bit more detail. And in terms of the Regulation 3, because the first one deals with this definition, and the second one is just the scope of application. Now, in terms of Regulation 3, provides just for the detail of how this application must be made to the head of the department and what information must be included in that application to the head of the department. It says, for example, here that an application must contain the following details: the nature and extent of the additional work to be done, and identified posts in which the employee will be utilized for such additional work, a post description and job content, the number of hours to be worked, and the duration of the proposed additional work. Those are the further, provides other further detail also that needs to be in the application. It also provides that the governing body must keep a record of the actual time worked by the employee, because there was contestation on did this particular indicator actually work these hours that particular aspect has been paid extra for. It further also provides for a formula on how this educator must be paid. And in terms of this formula, we've taken the annual total package that the state-based employee divided by 1,800 hours. So that's the hours that the number of hours that the state employee is expected to work in a full-time post. And then you get the outcome of that, and then the additional hours must be multiplied. If you work 3 hours, you multiply 3 with the outcome of that. So it's providing for that particular detail. And that is just to assist schools on to implement this particular provision. It also provides that there must be agreement between the governing body and the educator before that the educator can be paid extra remuneration. It excludes certain aspects, for example, payment of gratuities, payment of bonuses, payment for hostel supervision, and so forth. Certain things are excluded from for which the governing body do not need to apply for permission.
You may need a thing to understand.
Yeah.
Because I'd just like to take it not yet further without legal advice.
Sorry, it's a bit difficult
and complicated too.
Yeah.
Because I have a problem with that one. You may answer the other questions.
The question on the issue in the on the MOU in the Eastern Cape, I think that it's a bit of a misunderstanding what the head of the department is trying to achieve now. It's not to set aside the MOU. the Section 100 MOU intricate between the national government and the provincial government, but it's that particular judgment or settlement in that particular court case, the PJ Olaf matter that I quoted on. Because what happened was that Mr. Mavelli, who was the current national intervention officer, he signed a settlement agreement to settle the court case. And then that settlement agreement was in my order of court. Now, the HMB's argument is that he is still the accounting officer. And as the accounting officer in law, he's the one who's got the authority to settle court cases, and not Mr. Mavedi. He may be technically correct there, because he is apparently still the accounting officer. And that also brings me to, I just want to deal also with that, because somebody else also asked a question on that. I think it's Honorable Small. Yeah, the issue of the management letter. Currently, the intervention in the Eastern Cape is managed by a committee established by the president. They call it the 5x5 committee. This committee consists of 5 MECs from the Eastern Cape and 5 ministers, including the Minister of Basic Education. This committee is taking all the executive decisions managing the Section 100 intervention. I don't want to go too much in detail on the issue, but there was, as far as I know, there was a letter that was sent to the MEC for Finance in the Eastern Cape requesting that Mr. Mavelli be made the accounting officer. The MEC of Finance in the Eastern Cape did not provide or did not act on that. The situation currently is a bit very, the political situation is currently very, how can I put it, diplomatic? It is a bit unstable, because it seems there are certain forces within the Eastern Cape that strive to attack this intervention or trying to stop it. I don't want to expand too much further on that, but that is the situation that we've tried, because in terms of the PFMA, Section 33 of the PFMA, somebody, the relevant treasury may appoint somebody other than the head of department as the accounting officer in terms of that particular provision. And that is what we tried then to achieve by that letter to the MEC for Finance. I apologize. So that is the process with regard to that particular issue. It's very complicated that you have now two people in charge, so to speak, of a department, and creates a lot of conflict. But maybe it's not my place to further speak on that.
Thank you.
You see, the advocate being against the legal advice, not the advice. I think he is the most appropriate person to deal with this matter. I'm going to explain why. I agree with him. You can't have two people in charge. And Honorable Makwele and I had asked from him another meeting, and Honorable Mon also, we were talking about administrator is there by the counter. Now, you have an intervention. That, you know, the fact that you intervene is because these people could not sort themselves out. Now you send a team there, this team led by Dr. Mwe. And the person who couldn't sort himself out sent up to block him. There must be some law in this section 100 that will say to the head of department, shut up. Stand back. Otherwise, Section 100 means nothing. Now we want, that's why I said the principle, in other words, the legal part. Can the head of department block? Because he's blocking. Is there no law that can say to him, shut up, you are failed?
That is exactly what we are saying. There was a lot of interaction with the Eastern Cape correspondence going to and fro between the two departments, and we've exactly taken that position that Section 100 is there, it's the Constitution, it's the supreme law, it must be implemented, and the Minister assumed those particular powers as set out in the MOU, and therefore she is the authority. Those powers are resolved with her. She then delegated it to Mr. Mwene. So that is exactly what the position that we've taken, exactly as you put it now. That law is there and it must be implemented. Thank you. I want to then further go and respond to the pregnancy regulations. I unfortunately did not do justice to the regulations because of the short time span that I had. The issues that you've mentioned, who is responsible for the safety of learners, all of that is addressed in the regulations. And also, are the parents allowed to withdraw the learner? The learner is given the option of either to continue with schooling or to stay at home. That option is given in the regulations. It's quite comprehensive. It provides for the responsibilities of parents, the responsibilities of learners, and these issues that you've mentioned is in the regulations. So unfortunately, I couldn't do justice to it in the short time span that was allowed to me in this presentation. Perhaps in another presentation, we can perhaps go in more detail in these particular regulations. The question on the Afrikaans, we've obtained statistics from the emergency section, from the Funchal Parker directorate dealing specifically with the administration of the bursaries, and then the statistics that we managed to get from that is that if you compare the numbers of learners who speak Afrikaans as a home language against the census, 2001 census, proportionally more Afrikaans learners who receive Funchal Lesaka bursaries who are Afrikaans and who are proud speakers receive those bursaries in comparison to the 2001 census. Also, if you compare them against the school population, 27% of Funchal Lesaka bursaries, the people who receive Funchal Lesaka bursaries are Afrikaans speaking. If you
with these statistics is that a claim by the Afrikaanse Taalraad that there's that the department discriminates against Afrikaans speaking learners is totally false. If you look at the at the specific statistics presented to us and the proportion of learners students who receive this test. Now, I don't know why the numbers are like that. I cannot comment, unfortunately, on that. But that is the numbers that we've received, which almost indicates that there's more bias towards Afrikaans learners. But I don't want to comment further on that, but that's the statistic that we receive. So my job is to defend the claim or the case, and the statistic doesn't support the claim by the Afrikaans Taalraad. Questions? Oh yeah, there was also sorry. There was a question on a CD, but I'll leave that up to my colleague to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to take those three questions first. I just wanted to deal with one or two other questions that came from Honorable Mishana. They acknowledged the apologies. I can't make a general apology for the process. It was the same as the fact that this particular delegation today has a balance from the gender balance. But I think that in terms of the structural realignment of the department, there are very many opportunities that can be that will definitely follow up as a department, and certainly in terms of the issue of edits and in cases where certain acknowledgements will have to be made about the gender bank in terms of our own equity strategy. I think in terms of that's the general starting matter which we can't really respond to as one single branch. There are some other aspects also that came up, nothing that links to the fact that it's listed as this particular branch's planning function, is that we articulate the planning aspirations of the department, but we don't implement as a branch every one of the aspects listed here. So I think we need to acknowledge first is that what we listed in our presentation are the general identified objectives of the department in our strategic plan, and through the action plan 2014, there were all of these articulated assessments of the outcomes of the culture of government, and as we've identified those are critical to the Department of Basic Education, we will include that in our planning regime. So that is why this is there as focused planning interventions, because they are captured in our delivery agreement, in the action plan, and in all of those areas of intervention, which we want to align across all of those different divisions. So we will not necessarily speak to each of those items as the delivering branch. We need to plan the broader framework within which all of our strategic objectives have to be met. The comments that have been made have been acknowledged, and we will certainly take that back to the branches where they are directly responsible. In the case of the comment that was made about the DVD, I think that was slightly not clear. Which specific comment you were referring to on the member, so we will just note that. In the case of the fees in public schools, I didn't quite get your question, and maybe if the chair would allow you to repeat that question, and I'll just come back to it. Rather no fees. That we will note that too, because in terms of our no fee policy and in terms of fee exemption,
there are steps that the department has taken place in terms of our policy framework and the regulatory mechanism for parents who are not able to pay fees or where they feel there's a discriminatory agenda in place to properly prevent a child from being registered or from being able to complete their school year, that there are steps in place for that to be dealt with. And each parent has that right together with each of these to exercise their rights in that regard. So we will produce that kind of consultation of the member. In terms of the school visits, there was also a question on promotion of schools. I didn't get a complete question there. I missed in the lab colleague that picked that up, but that is not complete. So I don't recall who asked that question. Maybe the chair can come back to allow that manager to answer the question or the chair back to there was also a question about how far we've gone with the CAPS training. Again, there are, we've just received reports at our EDCOM meeting of the extent of the CAPS training across provinces. But again, the responsible branch for CAPS training is the curriculum branch, and we can certainly ask them to provide the figures that they presented at EDCOM. We don't have all of those documents with us today, but there was a full report presented at our EDCOM meeting, in which there was a provincial breakdown of where those CAPS training sessions happened and they were and where exactly we are in the stage now with the CAPS preparation for the rollout for the next 2 years. There was a similar question about district officials. I think that was covered by the previous speaker. The budget of the CD. I thought that was the presentation made, the dedicated one day, made by Branch P. Unfortunately, Mr. Padiacha is my left. But there was a comprehensive report made on the FCD process. So I think we must just maybe share those documents and go back. If they didn't provide all of the information, we certainly can. So there was a very comprehensive report again made at the EDCOM meeting. So I think that one is covered as well. And then the comments I noted about the possibility for further stigmatization around HIV with segment I think that was covered by the afternoon. Maybe Mr. Lewis can come back to it, but I think the obvious concern I think should be noted there and that we should be looking at what the regulations and regulatory measures could do to prevent that kind of ambiguity from the school. So we'll note that. I'm not sure if we've covered them.
The monitoring and evaluation, the two are matters in place.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Although we don't have the details of the monitoring and evaluation mechanism in itself, the monitoring and evaluation mechanism will form part of the Grade R draft policy framework, so it will be incorporated within that. That's all information that I have at the moment to share about that.
On the
board, Jacobo.
Another question that she had missed was asked by Honorable Mushan on schools promoting the South African flag.
This is part of what we've included as part of the National Symbol Center, as part of the joint project of LEAD South Africa around the civil responsibilities and the enhancement of citizenship training. So I think it's worth the good point for us to amplify this. But I think also we must contribute to the campaign whether you will allow us to do that today or on another occasion. We will certainly love to speak about the two major campaigns around a hands up for education, as well as the efforts around the political responsibility and how that has been taken in terms of the partnership with the
international community. I'm not from Yahoo, you'll be the last person.
I think that's a question about the international council there. Thank you.
get you. What is mentioned in the slide is that it refers to the standardized assessments and through the work of the annual national assessment process. So it is within that.
Thank you, Chair. It's a very broad large advice.
Yes,
The major chunk of it is around international relations and communication. In the international relations one, we deal with those three legs that I pointed out, the global partnership one, which tends to allow the ODA and the development partners work with basic education, as well as the responsibility that the department has to lead UNESCO for all government departments on behalf and that the minister leads UNESCO as the chairman of UNESCO, so to speak. And this being the general conference here, there are some critical decisions that will be taken at this general conference that happens every 2 years. And so it would be useful for us to maybe share some of those obligations that we have to lead all of the four major sectors of UNESCO as an education department in partnership with others who lead in terms of communication and science and information. And I think in terms of that, we would appreciate the media's discussion and unpack that further. In terms of communications, we obviously have and we wanted to share with you some of the more recent developments in communication. So it obviously takes us a lot further than the traditional platforms that we've been able to use. So we wanted to do both a show and tell, but also to unpack the communication strategy in part with a portfolio of committee members for us to share how we are taking cognizance of the points that have been raised almost repeatedly in all of our sessions with the portfolio committee around how we ought to enhance public information and public advocacy about the efforts of the department. Both Minister and the Deputy Minister have regularly emphasized the fact that we need to really ensure that the efforts of the department and its partners are not lost on the public at large, and that we really need to ensure that we use the media to shape those initiatives and also to arm the public with information to allow them access to certain measures that are put in place to deal with some of the challenges in the sector. So I think those two particularly, Honourable Chair, we would like to share. I think the other section of the branch, they refer largely to the work of the support to the statutory structures through the Secretariat coordination and strategic coordination, and how that links in with implementation forums and technical implementation forums supported within the peer community. That together with the rest of the things we can summarize.
I said, what can we do? We can have another dedicated session for this. And it's not next week, but we can. That should come down again. But I'd like to ask a question like next week, we do an examination. Our examination. Do you think there's a need for us to call in emergency?
Yes. I don't think there would be any harm in doing that, because I think at this particular stage, and I never specifically agree with Mia, at this particular stage in terms of the readiness for the MSC, as well as the preparation towards the new the announcement and then the analysis, I think all of that should be critical for the very useful.
Fine, we'll put him on for our agenda. And then in 2 weeks' time, we'll have you back again. I think we just close the session. Because once you've got Wednesday, but now it's not really here, there is no Wednesday, no Thursday, no Friday. I'd like to close this meeting, and I'd like to thank the department for this very comprehensive report you gave us. Because I think the work that has been done is very interesting. And whatever questions that we answer, you can give us to us in that reason you can. But I think there is one or two things. You can just cover it in whatever it is when you speak to us. So I'd like to thank you for the scholarship, and at the same time, the committee too, and the closing of the session. I'd like to see what this is. And if you have people just in 2 minutes, before today is out. Yes, we gave out the minutes.